A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Eric Koslick, host of the Modern Bar Cart podcast, and this is OPP.
God bless everybody and welcome to another episode of OPP. Other People's Podcast is America's number one discovery platform that highlights your favorite podcasters and the dope shows they created. I'm your host, Corey Cambridge. Our special guest this episode is Eric Koslick, host of the amazing podcast, Modern Bar Cart. This cocktail podcast gives great information for home bartenders and industry professionals alike. If you're looking to take your cocktail game to the next level, this podcast is for you. I went down to Eric's home in Washington, D.C., and Eric and I talked about his passion for all things spirits. We got into how he got into the spirits industry. He shared some of his knowledge and alcohol fun facts. We experienced a cocktail tasting live on air. He shares his podcaster's picks. And of course, we get into his dope show, Modern Bar Cart. So let me introduce you to Eric Koslick.
Testing. What's up?
It's a great level.
Perfect.
Yo, we in the zone. What's up, Eric?
What's going on, Corey?
Dog. Thank you so much for having me in your home, bro. It's very, very nice. Yeah. You're a classy guy.
Thank you. Thank you. It took about half a decade of living in the mouse-infested apartments to get here, but we're here.
Look.
Some of the lawn's cut.
Look, if you see, well, first of all, the word lawn cut, I have not heard that. I live in Brooklyn. The word lawn cut in a long time.
There you go. Cool, man. Well, thanks for making the trip down, including me in this little travel walkabout that you're doing.
Look, come on, man. First of all, it's good to finally connect with you. George, what was George's?
George Macharko.
Shout out to George Macharko. Yes. Shout out to him for introducing me to Modern Bar Cart, yep. Which I'm a big, big fan of.
Great. He has a great podcast as well. He does a really tight interview format, and I really enjoyed being on it, so.
So tell me, are you from D.C.?
Not from D.C. originally. I grew up in Western Mass. I'm kind of gradually making my way south as I've gone to college. Well, I went to undergrad in Gettysburg for psychology. Then
at Gettysburg College?
Yep.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yep. Kind of a really cool place. Kind of a bubble, like many, many places, the small liberal arts colleges. But then I went down to...
My homegirl from high school moved to Gettysburg and like said the same thing.
It's a cool place.
Like she really raves about Gettysburg.
I just recently went back there for one of the last episodes that we published, Mason Dixon Distillery.
Okay.
And it's beautiful. Really enjoyed it.
What do they make there at the Mason Dixon Distillery?
They make a whole different range. So like when you come up with a craft distillery, like one of the first questions that you can ask is like, are they a specialist or are they a generalist?
Okay.
And Mason Dixon's definitely more of a generalist. The guy who runs it, Yanni, he's just very curious. He's got a Greek background, so he likes ouzo and he's into whiskey, he's into Jennifer, like just a ton of crazy stuff. But then you'll run into something like a Sagamore Spirit in Baltimore.
Okay.
And they're like, we make rye.
Okay. Okay. Well, what'd you major in at Gettysburg?
Psych major there. I have two unrelated degrees in the humanities, which is kind of why I'm here doing this instead of something a bit more specialized.
Wait, what was the other major?
Then I went and got my Master of Fine Arts in poetry.
Oh, dope.
Yeah. At University of Maryland, College Park. So that's how I came down to DC.
Okay.
I moved down here with my buddy Ethan and my other friend Russell, and they incidentally are the two co-founders of my company.
Oh, dope. So first of all, you're the person that I want to have in trivia. So I went to school in high school for humanities and a gifted program. So you study all of art history and the history of culture and the history of language.
Yeah.
But it's dope because you're the person that you want to have during trivia or during Jeopardy. We're the people that you want on your team.
Big fan of Jeopardy. Big fan of trivia. I am garbage at pop culture, though. So but I bet you know you'd be,
okay. Together,
yeah,
we are a mean team. Wait, how you like living in DC?
I love living in DC. You know, I grew up in a log cabin at the end of a quarter mile dirt road in the woods. So if you'd asked me when I first moved down to Hyattsville to go to the University of Maryland, it was one of the suburbs right outside of DC. If you'd asked me if I would enjoy city life, I would have said, no, I'm going to tolerate as long as I can. But I really have enjoyed living in DC. There's some stuff not to like about it for sure. You know,
traffic,
DC Metro traffic is garbage.
Horrible.
Beltway.
Horrible.
I plan like when I have to go and do sales calls or podcasts outside, I'm like, I'm not getting on the road until 10 a.m. and I'm not getting back on the road to come back any later than 3 p.m. because otherwise you just can't move.
No, it's one of those things that I say. When you live in complicated areas like LA or New York or DC, there's factors in your day. In New York, the weather is a factor.
Totally.
In LA, traffic is a factor. DC, traffic is a factor. Totally. Like, without a doubt.
Right. And everybody thinks they're smart. They're like, oh, I'm going to leave at 4. Well, no.
Everybody's
leaving at 4. So you're not smart. You're just part of the problem now.
Right. Exactly.
Right.
This is like the first city you've ever lived in. What is it like adjusting socially or... you know, professionally, is there any adjustment at all?
For me, I tend to be a little bit more of a homebody, a little bit more of an introvert when it comes to social stuff. I was lucky. There's some organizations that I'm a part of. One is called The Inner Loop, which is, they also have a podcast, The Inner Loop Radio. But they are a creative writing kind of series and community that I joined coming right out of grad school, and they do monthly readings here. And so that's a good way to get out and meet people and participate in culture. And so that's been really good. And otherwise, just, I mean, the podcast has been huge in just like helping me get to know people in this area and, you know, and beyond. So it's, I find that one of my big struggles was kind of like networking and being social, because I grew up in a family culture where it was like, if you're networking, you clearly aren't working hard enough doing the work that you're supposed to be getting done right now.
Right.
It's like networking wasn't really valued. And I think the more I've done the podcast and the more I've gotten opportunities based out of that, I'm realizing that there's a way to use who you know well, and not just to not be like one of those privileged people who just get things passed down to them based on who they know, but to try and actually, you know, give value to who you know, and then you kind of get that back in return. It always helps that, you know, I do something that involves cocktails and spirits and stuff like that, because, you know, you're rarely disappointed to see the cocktail guy.
Yeah, true.
Right. Social lubricant, you know, it tastes good.
How'd you get into like your loving spirits?
So it started when I started a craft cocktail bitters company in Bitterment with my two co-founders, who we moved down here from Gettysburg. And it started just as a kitchen thing. My buddy Ethan was messing around with bitters. I was like, hey, let's maybe tweak this X, Y, and Z. What if we did this? So we made it really good. And then, you know, we kind of had that light bulb moment of like, oh, we could sell this. And so at that point, we hit up Union Kitchen, which is a food company accelerator and manufacturing space here in Washington, D.C. We've been with them from the start and filed some paperwork, turned into a business, and then started selling our bitters and getting feedback from a ton of local retailers, distillers, bars, and bartenders. And then after a couple of years, it grew to the point where we decided that instead of just having a line of cocktail bitters, we were going to expand, rebrand, and continue educating. So Embitterment turned from a brand into a product line.
Okay.
And now the brand is Modern Bar Cart, and our kind of idea, the reason why we are here, is to help people build a home bar that they're really excited about and that they can do a really good job entertaining with. So we're kind of providing some of the mixers and some of the tools that you need to do that. But then we're also here really to provide great, free, high quality, nutritious education about spirits and cocktails. Because when we first launched the bitters, we did it at this event called DC Veg Fest. And it's a big vegan kind of natural food place. And we thought, well, who's going to know about bitters? And we're like, I bet it's those hippies and their essential oils. They're going to know what bitters are. And yet even with that targeted audience, we still spent that entire event, instead of selling bitters, explaining what they were. So really early on, it was that inflection point where it's like educate, educate, educate. And so as soon as we rebranded, I got the idea for the podcast and just started putting together episodes, sitting down with the people I immediately had in the vicinity with me. And we are about to turn 100 episodes old in less than 2 weeks.
Congratulations, dog.
Thanks, man. Yeah, it's weird to be 100.
So tell me, where did your natural beginning love for spirits, you know, come from? Do you remember the first drink you ever had?
First cocktail I ever had?
Just drink you ever purchased or ever had on your own?
My first cocktail story is pretty good.
What was that?
So I'd never had a real cocktail before. I didn't actually drink all that much in college because I wasn't part of Greek life. Gettysburg's 80% Greek. I was part of the 20.
Okay.
And so I was also an athlete in college. I did decathlon. And so I was just beating up on my body. I couldn't really be putting alcohol into it anyway. So, but one summer I was working... I worked at a restaurant outside of Gettysburg, and the chef was doing this amazing, like wood-fired Galician Spanish tapas cuisine. And he was doing things to food that I'd never seen before. And I did something really shitty to him one day. I didn't even realize it, but apparently he was getting paid $100 a day to run this really world-class restaurant. And he had two kids, another kid on the way. And I complained to him at one point after the shift about like tips being slow that night, and he just looked at me with like the dad eyes, like the I'm tired, but I see this world in a different way than you do.
Yeah.
And he was just like, you know, you make more money than I do, right? And I don't think I'd ever felt as shitty as I did in that moment. So the next day I went to the liquor store and I got a bottle of Maker's Mark because I wanted to get him something nice, but I didn't know what nice was at that point.
Right,
so
right.
I saw the red wax dripped over the top.
And sold.
I was like, okay, this at least it looks nice. So I got that. I brought it in. And I was like, hey, are we good? He's like, yes, we're good. He poured some out, like took a big shot of it himself. And then he made a simple syrup and he told me to go out to the garden and pick some mint. And then he put the simple syrup and the mint directly in the bottle, shook it up and stuck it in the freezer. And then after the shift was over, we pulled out a couple of chairs into the patio out front and I had my first mint julep.
Oh, get out.
And it was like catharsis kind of, because it was like I'd taken this thing. It was an apology. And then he took it and he did something nice, you know, back to me. So it was that was my first real cocktail. And from there, I just started, you know, playing around. I've always had a pretty adventurous palate. My grandfather was a chef. And so during my last year of my MFA program, I took a wine class and that really kind of accelerated it. So I started with wine and then just started getting deeper and deeper from there.
Yeah, you're a classy dude. My first alcoholic woman was Hypnotic.
Oh, what was? Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Yes, that's my response. Years later, 15 years later, oh, no.
Oh, no.
No, no. It's my boy. Actually, my boy, Garrett. He lives here in D.C. I might give him a holler later. But Garrett came through my crib. Because, yo, this is the thing about hip-hop culture. A lot of folks within the hip-hop culture are just starting to experience, like, alcohol on, like, getting knowledgeable about it.
Okay.
You know what I mean? So rappers at the time were just talking about Hypnotic. So you don't know anything else. So if you're 16, 17 years old and you just see this like green drink that looks kind of fruity and delicious, you're like, I want that. And then I took it. Like, this is absolutely disgusting. I remember being like 18. My first time having Hypnotic. And that was my first actual bottle that I purchased. I had a friend who was 21. He purchased it for me.
Gotcha.
And it was absolutely disgusting. So
yeah, it's
interesting. You're a classy guy.
It's interesting, like how you first come to it, right? I didn't come from a family that really drank alcohol really at all. Like there was maybe a Barefoot Merlot somewhere kicking around.
Yeah.
But really not much more than that. And so I think it is a little bit strange. My grandfather's still embarrassed. He tells his friends I'm a chemist.
But in a way you are.
Sure. He could tell whatever he wants. I don't care, but it's strange. Like I'm definitely doing something that is foreign to what I was raised with for sure.
Yo, you know what? I should have brought up a bottle of Hypnotic for you.
You should have. Next time, man.
It's never too late.
Next time.
Well, I can run to the store, grab some Hypnotic for us.
I bet that corner store right there's got some.
You know, so a quick break. Eric, when we get back, we'll go back into your show, Modern Barkhart.
Sounds great.
My man, we're back.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
How did you first discover podcasting?
I started listening to podcasts. So after I graduated with my MFA in poetry, remember, two unrelated degrees in the humanities, can't really do much. So I got marketing jobs. Anybody can do marketing, right? If you've got like just some little in. I knew how to write and I knew how to do a WordPress website because I had built one for Embitterment. So WordPress plus knowing how to write got me a SEO web content job. So I was able to learn SEO. I was working for these law firms for about 3 years. And I learned at that time that I'm a terrible desk employee. Mm. Absolutely toxic. Because as soon as I don't agree with my manager, I just ruin the day for everybody. I'm just like a bad presence.
Yeah, I'm that way too, man. I'm the exact same way. I feel like it's a skill set to be able to be submissive.
Yeah.
It's a skill set.
And to trust what's going on. Like I just question everything, which I think is why I enjoy podcasts. Cause you get to, like you said off air, like you really get to just focus on the questions.
Yes.
And in an office setting, just being constantly questioning is basically just undermining authority, which is something I've enjoyed since I was a kid, but didn't work out. So I kind of, after a couple of years working for different law firms in legal marketing, I stepped out. But during that time, I listened to a lot of podcasts because a lot of what I was doing was kind of just tedious office work. So I had these podcasts piping through my headphones during that time. It's right when podcasting got really mainstream. Because I'm not a guy who's ahead of the curve on much of anything.
Yeah,
except for maybe a couple of spirits. So I didn't come to it in like 2010 or 2012 or whenever it was. I came to it in like 2015, 2016.
Yeah.
And so the first one that I listened to that was cocktail related was the Speaking Easy podcast. Shout out to those guys. And that got me into like different formats. I started listening once I went full time to Tim Ferriss. And that really helped from a business perspective and just like a mentality perspective of being an entrepreneur. So after having listened to a number of podcasts, I was like, this can't be all that difficult. And less than $1,000 in equipment later, I was just recording my first 10 episodes and we launched those all at once in probably late May or early June of 2017. And the rest has kind of just been going straight through from then.
Well, I ask most commonly on the show, if you look up from a songwriter background. So when I write music, when you first start off writing music, you don't have your own voice. You kind of discover your voice kind of through your favorite artist. And then over time from doing it enough, you kind of develop your own style. So who is someone that helped you kind of develop your style as a host? And how did you develop that?
I think listening to the way that Tim Ferriss evolved as an interviewer over the course of his podcast was good because he was pretty garbage at first. And now I think he's one of the better interviewers out there. Another great interviewer that I admire is Sean Carroll. He does a more science-y podcast called mm-hmm. Mindscape. But I got in the way of myself a lot at first, did a lot of interruptives and a lot of interruptions of my guests. And so I think my style now is I still like to keep the back and forth going with my interview guests. I definitely have an agenda with my podcast, and that's something that I try and structure by sending interview questions ahead of time so that they know kind of like what the story, the narrative that I'm trying to tell from start to finish with, you know, starting with like, if we're doing a spirits-based podcast, it usually starts with definitions and like, how is this made? And then evolves more to like different styles, different distinctions, different categories. And then finally with kind of like a more of a big picture overview. So I try and build that narrative, but I try and do it a little bit more hands-off than I did at first. And I'd say overall, my style is just to embrace the nuance, because I think my frustration with a lot of cocktail podcasts out there is that they offer a recipe and then that's kind of it. They'll offer you some kind of canned wisdom that's generally accepted. And it's almost, I feel like it's kind of a Cliff Notes approach to things. And I'm not interested in the Cliff Notes. I'm interested in where things start to break down.
Yeah.
Where, especially think about like the spirits and cocktails world, it's all about definitions and classifications. Like, well, is this a Manhattan or is this a martini? Is this a tequila or is this a mezcal? What's the differences between those things? And I'd like to see where those things break down. And so I really embrace the nuance, but I still to try to have that overall structure so that people come out of the podcast, whether they're a complete novice or somebody who's really well versed, I want them all to come out feeling like they've learned something.
Because you mentioned that you went out, bought the gear and you started your first 10 episodes, but I want to kind of unlock that a little bit more. Like, yeah. How did you understand the process of creating a podcast?
Well, for me, I wanted to do a lot of kind of starter content for the first couple episodes. So what those actually evolved into. So I didn't like an episode on citrus, an episode on ice, episode on what is essential for your home bar. And every once in a while, I'll drop an episode like that into the podcast. And I've actually categorized my episodes, and it's really useful on our website, because you can actually just click on a button and it'll give you a list of all the things that are in that category. So we have our interview episodes. And then one of the other big categories is what I call bar cart foundations episodes. And I'm actually going to be doing one of those in the week following when we record this on carbonation.
Okay.
Right.
Explain.
So like talking about what's the difference between club soda, sparkling water, seltzer water, tonic water. Like, there are some differences here. And I'll be honest, I'm at this point in time, I have not yet done my research.
So yeah.
I don't really know what they are, but I know there are differences. And I want there to be one place where a beginner listener can go, understand those differences, and then have some use case or application for those differences in their home bartending life. So that's what the Bar Cart Foundations episodes do. And those really evolved from that first chunk of episodes I released, was more of that foundation style. But okay. Then as the podcast got rolling, I got access to more people who actually wanted to sit down and talk with me. So that's kind of how it evolved, and how I still keep those foundations episodes in there every once in a while. When there's a topic I feel like I can really zoom in on and be helpful with, I'll stick one in. But it has evolved to be more of the interview format.
You mentioned that, I think I heard on the last episode, that because you're not a bartender, you've never bartended. Have you bartended before?
I've been behind some bars. Like, I've bartended to help out a couple of my industry friends every once in a while, but I have never been employed as a bartender.
And then you're laying in the spirits industry. You're not a seller or a distributor.
Right. So I work with distributors. I'm kind of a maker, but I'm trying to transfer away from that. So currently we make all of the embitterment bitters. I'm working on finding a partner to take over that side of things right now. Still going to keep everything the same. Still going to keep the same great recipes, but we're going to, I want to try and focus more on getting the word out and doing more of the promotion.
Well, what was an episode to you, a modern bar cart, that stuck out as a magical moment, or an episode that we should to check out?
Definitely. The one that I would say early on is the best piece of storytelling we did was the vodka episode. I think it's episode 28 or something like that. And this one is different than most of the other episodes we do. I did interviews with a vodka distiller, one of my wife's friends who grew up in the Soviet Union.
Okay.
So they got that kind of cultural vodka perspective. And then I did a blind tasting of three different vodkas with two guys, actually the two guys who ran the Speaking Easy podcast, but they hate vodka. So I said, okay, guys, we're going to sit down and we're going to do a tasting of these different vodkas.
Okay.
And we're going to see if they taste different. And it was so cool to be able to weave the cultural perspective, the distiller's perspective, and then kind of the contrarian's perspective into one story. And so that one's really good. And then in terms of interviews, I had a really interesting interview in Los Angeles with a guy named Brian Davis, who's actually kind of disrupting barrel aging in the spirits industry. And it was so cool to talk to him about his accelerated barrel aging process that he's doing, where he can take something over the course of just a couple of days and turn it into something with an equivalent profile of something that's been in a barrel for 30 years. which completely shatters the economics of that situation. So it was just so funny to be able to talk to him and have him be so genuine about like what he's doing and how it's very different from what the industry is used to and what that maybe means for the industry. So that was a really cool interview I was able to nail down. I really liked it.
And was that in the world of you know, whiskey, or is that in the world of wine?
Whiskey and rum and aged spirits like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Stuff that would go into a charred oak barrel and sit there. Like think of like a 25-year-old rum or, you know, a massively old brandy or something like that. If you think about that going into a barrel, you essentially have to, as a distiller, you have to pay rent for that while it sits in your house. So it's going to sit in your little barrel house, taking up space. So you got to pay rent. You got to pay for somebody to go in and taste it every once in a while. And you basically also are just like, it's a cash flow thing of like, it's sitting up on the shelf and you can't sell it until it's ready. But if you can do something that tastes the same in the course of 5 days, yo, how much cheaper would that be? So it would open up an entire new flavor experience to a class of people who, up until this point in history, had never been able to afford that flavor.
Interesting. Wow. What episode was that?
It was my interview with Brian Davis. I'm not quite sure the number of the episode, but it was this past January or February we released it. And it's the second interview I did with him. The first one was actually an interactive tour of his distillery, which is also really freaking cool because it's like a Wonka plain land for booze.
Yeah.
But anything with Brian Davis is a really great interview that we've done.
But what have you personally learned from Modern Barcart for yourself through this process of podcasting and almost 100 episodes in?
Yeah, 100 episodes. It still seems weird to say that number, but I think what I've learned is the power of just asking, and the again, like we were talking about earlier, the power of networking, not to try and get something from someone, but to try and give mutual value. I've had some people on this show that I have absolutely no right to have like said yes to me. Maggie Hoffman, an incredible, really talented spirits writer, a ton of different authors who have just like said yes to promote a book, and that was a great way to get in, and some really, really excellent distillers and industry experts who I just asked on a whim, not expecting to be able to. And it was just, I learned so much. And I'm the sort of person who doesn't want to inconvenience anyone. I don't like to put people out. I don't want to often put myself in a position where no could be the answer, because I like to try and optimize my life against that. But yeah, the podcast has taught me that that's the statistics on that game. If you do it for the right reasons and you frame it correctly, the statistics are overwhelmingly in your favor. So it's something I've grown more comfortable with as a person through the podcast.
Yeah. What about something about yourself? You know, how were you as a person before you started your podcast, and how have you changed as a person now that you've, you know, you're approaching a century, and episodes?
I think now I take a little bit more time and listen differently than I did when I started the podcast. I think I was much more anxious about just like getting my question in there and making sure that like the exact vision of the podcast as I had it going into the episode was going to be realized. But I think now, 100 episodes in, I'm much more comfortable with the free-flowing conversation, and I take a way more relaxed approach to every interview. And I think universally the interviews go much better when I've got that loose structure on the outside and I just let things flow, because it allows for the unexpected, allows for surprises. And I think that's something that I've gotten more and more comfortable with as I've gotten into the medium, and that's why people listen too. They listen for the surprise, and surprise is kind of the thing that delights us about great poetry or great comedy or great flavor. Mm.
So you mentioned off air, You want to make some drinks.
We should.
So what do you like to drink?
So I am a gin guy, and DC is a gin city.
Explain that to me. Why is DC a gin city?
Well, it has a little bit to do with, I think, just the heat here.
Yeah.
So the gin Ricky is the cocktail of DC. It's DC's official cocktail, and it's just gin, lime, soda.
Okay.
Maybe a little sugar in there, right? So the gin Ricky is this very simple. It's basically the lime equivalent of the Tom Collins.
Okay.
So a little sweet, a lot of sour. soda and ice. So it's super refreshing with those gin botanicals. And that's kind of what you want here in the swamp, because it does get real nasty here in the summer. So
talk about it.
And then there, the first distillery that opened up after Prohibition here in DC is called New Columbia Distillers, and they're the makers of Green Hat Gin. And the guy they named their distillery after was the man in the green hat, who was the official bootlegger of Capitol Hill.
Okay.
During Prohibition, they actually gave him his own office, I believe.
Oh, that would make sense.
Right, right. But yeah, so it's a big gin culture here. And my favorite cocktail is the Last Word, which is equal parts gin, green chartreuse, which is a crazy, crazy flavor.
Okay.
Maraschino liqueur and lime. So it's equal parts, and you stir that up. It's just it's the craziest cocktail I think you'll ever taste.
Because you know what? Like, I know that as I've gotten older, my tastes have matured. Like, where was gin always your go-to from the very beginning of your journey? Like, what was your more go-to drink early on?
I think early on, as with many people, I was an old-fashioned guy.
Yeah.
Because the old-fashioned, there's something beautiful about that simplicity. Whiskey, sugar, bitters, spirit, ice, you stir it up. There's a number of ways you can make it. And the cool thing about the old-fashioned, what I'll tell people out there who are listening, it's a great indicator cocktail. Just like the martini, just like the Negroni, these very simple classic cocktails, if you have one that you really like, walk into a bar you don't know, and to get a read on that bar, order that drink. And the way they prepare that drink for you will tell you kind of what they're all about as a cocktail program. So that's why I like it as an indicator cocktail. But yeah, I think I've gotten more into gin because right when I started getting into cocktails, a lot of American distillers started doing new things with gin. Not just the Juniper Bomb London Dries that we're all associated with. To me, that was a really cool entry point where I could just dive deep down this rabbit hole and really dig into botanical profiles and train my palate. So I think that's why I love it.
Because you know what? I have a question for you. I interviewed this guy named DJ Clark Kent. He's a music producer. He's like produced for some legendary cats like Jay-Z and Biggie and all these big guys. And he mentioned something in our episode that was interesting to me that I never thought about. And at the end of the episode, he talks about going to, because he's a DJ, going to parties, and it messes up the party for him when the DJ's not good, right? Because he can't just enjoy the music for being the music.
Yeah.
So has your love for spirits and your knowledge of spirits and your experience with spirits kind of sometimes maybe ruin what should be just a fun night at a bar with friends, but because you are such an expert and you study this, that you're like, I just want this to be right?
I don't think so. To be honest, I think I would actually say the opposite, because what has happened more, like instead of getting more and more kind of like fastidious about what I want and like exacting with, like, I would never send anything back, first of all. Like even if I got like a cocktail that I didn't like, I would never send it back. But now I think, especially at home, because that's where I do most of my drinking is at home as opposed to out at the bar, because just got a new place, money's a little tight. But I find that I've actually gotten lazier. So like when I'll make myself a cocktail, sometimes I'll just ditch the garnish. Like, and you know, in an old fashioned, that orange peel garnish is like,
oh, clutch.
Tops it off.
Yeah.
So I find it actually goes the opposite direction for me. And I think what you can equate it to is chefs. So if you ask that same question to a chef about food, like if you see what a chef eats, it's like they're just sitting in the kitchen, like just shoveling in some like just nasty, greasy mac and cheese. Like they're making these like 5-star meals.
Right.
And they're just like, just give me some empty carbs. And I'd say, if anything, it's the opposite direction. Like the same thing for me. I've gotten less exacting about what I'm looking for in a drinking experience. And when I do go out, I'm looking to appreciate the things that are done well, and I'm more apt to like overlook the things that aren't. So how about we shake up this cocktail that I just made?
Dude, what's shaking? Let's do it.
So what I put in this cocktail shaker right now is equal parts gin. In our case, we used Roku gin, which is a really amazing Japanese gin that just hit the American market. You can see my bottle's almost empty.
You've been getting down.
Yeah, it's a fantastic, you could sip this straight or you could make a great cocktail with it. And then we've got the chartreuse. We've got another French liqueur called Suze. And Suze is a gentian liqueur. And I love this because gentian is the bittering agent that we use in all of our cocktail bitters. It's
okay.
Very bitter. So this kind of puts it closer to like an Amaro, but it's also got these great lemony notes, which is why the last part of the cocktail is lemon juice. So lemon juice and Suze always go great together. So we've got the gin, the chartreuse, the Suze, and lemon juice in equal parts. And I'm going to shake that up right now.
Yes.
Give it a little smack, pop out that.
Let's go.
Shaker tin. And I'm going to strain it into a couple little like novelty little glasses that I have. I got these at Thrift Shopping, which is a great place to get glassware.
Okay.
On the cheap. I think I paid like less than $5 for each of these glasses. And you can see this has just this creepy green, like ghostly milky color to it, which is the chartreuse and the Suze.
Yeah. It's kind of has like a... Like, you were saying it, but that's like a, if I could describe it to the audience, it's yellowish green. It's almost like a, like Gak from Nickelodeon, but like way lighter.
Yeah.
Like a lighter Nickelodeon Gak.
Yeah, totally. And, yeah. So why don't we give this a little sip?
Cheers, brother.
Cheers.
Oh my goodness.
It's refreshing. Got that lemon pop.
This is okay. This is my non-expert analysis of how I would categorize this to the audience. This is like a grown-up version of a lemon drop.
Yeah, totally.
But the grown-up version.
Right, like the evolved, like the all the way evolved Pokemon.
Yes, like this is refreshing. This is light. This is grown and sexy. This is what you want with your girl in the spring on a Sunday at brunch.
Totally.
Like this is... sexy.
Totally. And if you wanted to stretch this cocktail out, like say you made like a portion of it and you brought it in like like a big water bottle or something, if you brought that to a party and then put some sparkling water next to it or some club soda or whatever, then you could serve that on ice as like a highball and stretch it out a little bit and it would still be super refreshing.
What else do you taste in here?
Well, you definitely get that gentian. So like as you finish, as the end of the flavor profile is called the finish usually. So on the finish, which is basically the way I describe it, is it's the cloud of dust that remains as the flavor drives off.
Yeah.
You get that bitterness. So it's sitting there right on the back of your tongue. I get like that bitterness from the gentian and the Suze. And you still get some of those soft, herbal, kind of flowery qualities of the chartreuse.
Definitely a floral. That's why I definitely get that feeling of spring. Mm-hmm. It just feels very appropriate for like this type of day that we're in right now.
Totally. And you know, it's funny when people think of gin cocktails, they think of a gin and tonic, like a classic Tanqueray gin and tonic where you're like, bam, I've got my lime, I've got my juniper, I've got my bubbles, I'm good to go. The gin is really adding something to that. But here, and as with so many like Japanese spirits, the purity of the gin here is almost what they optimize for. So here the gin is very much in the background. It's like a supporting character. You're not tasting too many characteristics of this gin. It's almost acting as like the blank canvas for these other really interesting flavors to play against.
Wow. Well, okay. Well, this is by far the happiest podcaster's pick segment I've ever had.
Yeah.
This is amazing. So Eric, we've hit a part of the show called our podcaster's picks, where I asked my favorite podcasters to give me their favorite shows, three of their favorite shows, and to describe them to me. So, as we sit here and enjoying some delicious spirits,
yeah,
give me three shows that you enjoy, my man, that we should be checking out.
You're very lucky, actually, being from New York. There's the Heritage Radio Network. They broadcast.
Yes, my homegirl is on that network.
Really?
I had her on OPP, Linda Liu.
Okay.
She has a podcast called Feast Meets West.
Yes, I listened to that one. That was really good. So that They operate out of Roberta's Pizza.
Yeah, yes. In
beautiful Bushwick.
Bushwick.
Yes.
Yes, I've never heard Bushwick be referred to as beautiful, but yes, it is.
So
it's creative. It's innovative.
Yes. But yeah, so the Heritage Radio Network does great food and beverage programming. So if you're looking for that, if you listen to the Modern Bar Cart podcast and you're like, I like this, there are a couple of great shows there. One that I listen to every week is Cooking Issues. It's by Dave Arnold, who's the author of Liquid Intelligence. He has this aggressive, manic, very New York energy about him, but he also is such an authority. Like he'll come out and say something hugely offensive or abrasive, but he has a list of 10 reasons why that is universally true and why he can make that claim in such a bold, brash manner. He just walks the walk so intensely that when it comes to food, I love listening to him. So that's a great show. And then The Speakeasy, hosted by Damon Bolte, who owns Grand Army in New York, and okay. Souther Teague, who owns Amoria Margo and Honeybee and Windmill and a number. He's just this, he recently published a book as well. So that's a great spirits industry podcast to listen to. And then my last one for food drink would be the Spirit Guide Society podcast, based out of the Seven Grand in LA. That's hosted by Pedro Shanahan, and they have this huge whiskey bar out in LA. And they have these brand reps coming in from all over the world. So they'll do a podcast with their Spirit Guide Society where these people just take you through this whole tasting of a portfolio of spirits. And it's so cool to be able to listen in to how these people talk about flavor. So I really love listening to that. That helps me as I'm trying to like hone my own palate for these judging opportunities.
Yeah,
I listen to that a lot. And it feels like while I'm out driving, I can still be like educating myself about that.
Wow. And so the last question to wrap this amazing interview is, Eric, why do you podcast?
I think I podcast because I'm definitely more of a long form person than a short form person. And I prefer, as we've mentioned a couple times here, I prefer complexity and nuance to something that might be more of like a stock answer or a very neat box to be able to put something into. And I have this quote that I really enjoy from, I believe it's usually attributed to John Stuart Mill. It could be Mark Twain or Albert Einstein. You know how the internet's full of quotes that just get attributed to like three people.
But, yeah.
but the quote is, I would not give a fig for the simplicity on this side of complexity, but for the simplicity on the other side of complexity, I would give everything. Mm. And that really resonates with me because what I think I'm trying to do as I podcast is get people to embrace that complexity like I have been, and to get people who may be just starting out on their journey as a home bartender to take a risk to buy a bottle they might not otherwise buy, to make a cocktail for a guest that they might not feel totally comfortable executing, and to ask questions during the podcast that might get us a little deeper than we otherwise might on a shorter form podcast. And the goal is that hopefully if I can keep doing this the way that I am and keep going with this, that eventually I'll hopefully be able to put together some sketchy, maybe pixelated picture of what that simplicity on the other side of complexity looks like. I don't know if we'll ever get there because I think it's meant to be kind of aspirational, but I think that's kind of what I'm shooting for. And I think that's what keeps me scheduling these podcasts and keeps me excited about it.
Wow. Well, Eric Kozlik, host of Modern Bar Cart, my man, thank you so much for having me here at your lovely home. I feel like am I like your first guest that you had in your home?
You're pretty well, considering the shades are still in boxes in the living room. Yeah.
No, I feel so honored to be here. Thank you for welcoming me into your home. I love your show. I adore you, man. And thank you so much for contributing so much to the space. I appreciate you.
Corey, thanks for having me, man.
Thank you all so much for tuning in to another episode of OPP and to our special guest, Eric Kozlik. I'll be sure to provide the link to Modern Bar Cart in the description of this episode. This episode was mixed by Mark Bird. Music for this episode was produced by Richie Quake. And before we get out of here, be sure to check out my other show, Silent Giants. Silent Giants highlights the superstars behind the scenes of popular culture. And I'll be sure to provide the link for you to that in the description of this episode. I'm your host, Corey Cambridge. Pod bless y'all. Till next time.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.